New Hampshire Now is about informed discussion with the leaders of our nation, state, and community. I'm Chris Ryan.
We're going to have a great time, Chris, and thank you very much. Your show is fantastic.
Great to talk to you, Chris. Thanks for having me.
I do think, although determination matters, I think support from people who believe in you matters even more.
I was living in a tent for 3 weeks. Very cold, very hard to try and get homework done. But I was determined to stay in school because, I mean, that was the only thing that was going to get me out of this situation regardless of where I am.
I get a chance to talk to your wife and I get to interview her, which I'm fixing to do and if next time I see her.
I do know that from spending a lot of time here in New Hampshire, people in New Hampshire expect to meet you face to face.
And welcome to New Hampshire Now for the 28th day of November 2019, and a happy Thanksgiving to all of our listeners here on WKXL. I am Chris Ryan. This hour of the show is brought to you by New England College and NEC.edu, offering over 35 undergraduate programs, graduate programs as well, including clinical mental health counseling. I encourage you to check out NEC.edu for more information. This hour also presented by Riverbend Community Mental Health and Choices NH Addiction Recovery Services. Riverbend wants you to know the treatment works. For information, check out riverbendcmhc.org. And the Hampshire Now program, as always, proudly presented by the New Hampshire College and University Council. New Hampshire's colleges and universities are the backbone of our state's economy and provide tremendous learning opportunities for all Granite Staters. I encourage you to check out visitnhcolleges.com for more information. So here in the first hour of the program, do something a little different but special on Thanksgiving. As I've been intrigued by Brother Andre ever since a trip to Montreal when we did the show up there last, I think it was in August and September, has brought the boys to Park Safari and Zoo Granby up there. We did the show there. And we, on a whim, just decided to go to the Montreal Oratory and had an amazing experience. I had not been there since I was much younger. And since then, I have become extremely intrigued by the mysteries and healing power of Brother Andre. And there are people from New Hampshire, Vermont, across the region, and across the world who have made pilgrimages to the Oratory in Montreal, which is set on a hill, actually, on the backside of Montreal. If you're familiar with where the downtown is and its relationship with the St. Lawrence River, it's on the actual Montreal and on the backside. And so I started reading more and became more and more intrigued in him as an individual who could not really read or write, but rose to sainthood in the Catholic Church. So I decided to go up to Montreal earlier this week and have the focus of our Thanksgiving program on him and the fact that he cared for the poor and the individuals that were less powerful. He was not interested in prestige and title and such. And to me, this is a really good Thanksgiving message. And I was absolutely thrilled to get to sit with the rector, Father Claude Grou, and talk about Brother Andre, theology, and a lot of other different topics here in this hour of the program. And here we go.
I want to start with you're talking about who he was as a individual, because from what I had read, what it seems, he was a individual that was welcoming of all. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the problems that we have in our society today, without getting to espousing too much in regards to politics, is that very often we forget who the other person is, and there's a person there. And it seemed like Brother Andre was an individual that welcomed in all, and that's something is, I think, missing a lot of times in our society today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, let's go back to the story of Brother Andre very quickly to go through the main thing. He was born about 30 miles from Montreal in a very poor family, never went to school, which was not abnormal because many people living in villages in Quebec at that time did not have access to school, so they would learn to read and write at home, which he did at the home where he was. And then he joined the Holy Cross Congregation, which had come to the United States in 1842 and in Canada in 1847. So the congregation was rather new in Canada at that time in 1870 when he joined. Just before joining, when he was 18 years old, that's interesting, as many French Canadians, he couldn't find work here. So he went to Northeast United States and got several little jobs there, but his health was not very good, too hard the work that he had to do there. So he decided in 1867 to come back to Canada, and 3 years after he knew about the Holy Cross Congregation, joined the Holy Cross Congregation. And then he was very quickly after becoming a member of Holy Cross, he was asked to be doorkeeper at the college. The college was very new. The college started in 1869, we're in 1870, so the college was new, and the brother, of course, he did not have any skills to teach, but they asked him to do several jobs. One of these jobs was to be doorkeeper. And what you just said appeared very quickly. As a doorkeeper, it was not just a man who just said, you can enter, you cannot enter. He started listening to people who came to the door, and people started talking about things happening in their family. They knew he was a religious, so they would say, well, would you pray for my mother who is sick? Would you pray for my son who is sick? And Brother André always listened to people, and people started seeing the power of his prayer. So that's the way it started, by his capacity to listen to anybody coming to the door and going out of his way, because with all the work he had to do, he was very busy, and would go out of his way so much that at some point he started going to see people at home. People would say, you know, my mother is very sick and she cannot come out. And then Brother Andrew would have some of his friends to drive him to the place, and he would go to see people in their home and pray with the people there. So always this reaching out to people, whoever they are. Mm-hmm. The first man who wrote a short biography of Brother André was a Protestant journalist. And then he said, you know, comparatively at the number of people who come, I think Brother André has cured more Protestant than Catholic. So that's an interesting little phrase of this man who perceived it that way. We never had statistics of that, but that was a perception that whether you are a Catholic or a Protestant doesn't matter. You come to me because you need. You are a man who come to me because you feel prayer is important. So we'll pray with you, and we hope that God will help you. And things started happening in that way.
What's so interesting as well is that individuals of all religions, ethnicities, sexual orientations come here, and they come here because of, A, it's a beautiful view, B, also there's his presence. And despite the fact that he passed, I believe, in 1937, we still see individuals coming today who are sick to pray for others. And in terms of logistics, Notre Dame University is across the street, I believe, from where we are at the oratory.
Notre Dame College.
Yeah. You've kind of gone through his biography there. And at what point in his life did he start to notice or develop a reputation for his prayer having healing power?
It started very early. You see, he started in 1870 as a doorkeeper, started meeting people. But we have, in the late 70s, in 75 or 76, we have stories of people. There was especially a story of one of the brother at the college who had hurt his leg and was not healing. And the doctor did not know what to do. They thought they might have to cut the leg. And so Brother André asked him to use the oil in the front of St. Joseph and rub it on his leg and told him, you know, this oil doesn't have any miraculous power, but your prayer can be important. And this man was healed. And then he writes to his friends and friends telling the story and saying there are so many other stories like that happening now. So right in around 1875, 76, we have several stories that start going around of his healing power, or the power of his prayer. Because Brother Andre always said, I don't heal anybody. I pray God heals people through the intercession of Saint Joseph. So he was very humble, but also very right. It is God's power to heal people, and I'm just there to pray and to help you in your prayer. So that started very early, and this reputation started growing very quickly.
There's obviously skepticism, even at the college, in regards to what his powers were, or if he, powers might be the wrong word, but the ability to pray and to heal individuals through that prayer. And in order to become a saint, there's obviously significant thresholds that you have to cross in regards to miracles performed. So what do you say in regards to that skepticism, which individuals naturally have, and say it may just have been they healed naturally, but the numbers are so significant, and what are your feelings on that?
Well, I think it's a question of faith to know, to believe that it is God's power that is healing. There's no scientific way to prove that it is God's power. The science can tell that scientifically we cannot explain how this person can walk, because everything shows that he could not walk. So that the medical science can say. The rest to say is it just a chance, odd things that happen once in a while, or is it God's work? This is a question of faith. Well, some time ago, I met somebody here and says, well, you know, I always come here, and my son was working in the security system, and he hurt his hand so badly that he could not anymore hold a gun, so he could not get his job back. And then we came up and we prayed, and we climbed the stairs on our knees praying. And when he finished praying, he started seeing that his hand was getting better and his hand got all right. And I asked this man, does your son believe that it is God that has done that? And interestingly enough, he said, yes, my son believed that, but his wife doesn't believe it. Which is interesting, because it shows that believing that it is God at work is a question of my faith. The fact that the hand is cured is something real, but why it has cured, why it happened like that, it's a question of faith. And I think around Brother Andre, it's always this distance between what happened and what I see in this. Do I see God at work in this? Brother Andrew obviously always saw St. Joseph and God acting in that. But for people, each one will make his own understanding of what is happening. So we hear that when people come back to us and tell us stories of what has happened after coming here. Most people who come back to talk to us is because they have seen God's work in that. Mm. But other people would not see it in the same way.
That is Father Claude Giroux joining us here at the Montreal Oratory. And as I said before, I've always been fascinated by this place ever since I was a kid. And you walk in and there are crutches everywhere. You see individuals who will walk up the steps and pray on their knees, walk up on their knees essentially, because they're praying for themselves or for others. And, you know, we were talking about when Brother Andre first started to notice this, and you said it was 1870. And as I mentioned before, the individuals started to make and had made pilgrimages from all over the world, New Hampshire and places, in order to try to be in, you know, Brother Andre's presence. When did that aspect of things start to take place? Because you're talking about 1870, that's, you know, during the time period of the Civil War in the United States. There was not the ability to travel that existed. So at what point did his, you know, ability to heal become world-renowned?
Well, I think it became well-known rather quickly. But there are two very important moments. From 1870 till 1909, Brother Andrew was full-time doorkeeper, so he was not able to move so far, so much, to go to different places. In 1904, this community allowed him to build a small chapel, a small oratory on the mountain, which he did. But then he was not free to work full-time. Anyhow, the place was open only during summer, so he kept his work. 1909, he was completely freed from other job to be able to dedicate himself to be the guardian of the shrine. They did not give him a title of rector or superior or director. He was the guardian of the place. And then I think by that time, things started moving very fast. And then he went also several times to Northeast United States. Even he went up to California at some point, because some people who came here, who knew him, invited to go, come to our place, and would like to see you. And he also has some of his family members who lived in Northeast United States. So he made several visits to United States and to other places at that time. Whenever he would come to a place, sometime he would come there just to take a little rest with some members of his family. But as soon as we'll get to a place, people will crowd to see him, to talk to him, to ask for favors. So his reputation was very well known in several places, particularly in northeastern United States, and of course in Quebec, in New Brunswick, in some part of Ontario also.
Were there a lot of his own personal writings? It seemed like there was not a tremendous amount that he would write about his own experiences and things of that nature.
No, the only thing we have seen written by his hand is his signature. He never learned really to write. Mm-hmm. We have some letters written to his family, but we know now that there were some of his brothers in the community who would write for him and do the writing, so he never wrote anything by himself.
This is New Hampshire Now on KXL. This segment of the show brought to you by Suncook Dental. Dr. Andrew Albee and his team are phenomenal. Their focus is on your comfort and care as a patient. I encourage you to check out Suncook Dental at suncookdental.com. More from Montreal in a little bit, as we'll continue the conversation with Father Claude Grew in regards to Brother Andre, who is our focus here on Thanksgiving. This hour of the program presented by New England College as well as Riverbend Community Mental Health.
You're listening to New Hampshire Now with Chris Ryan, presented by the New Hampshire College and University Council. You're listening to New Hampshire Now with Chris Ryan, presented by the New Hampshire College and University Council.
This is New Hampshire Now on Thanksgiving 2019. I am Chris Ryan. This hour of the program presented by New England College as well as Riverbend Community Mental Health. And this segment of the show brought to you by Paradigm Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. That's who my family trusts to call for all our plumbing, heating, air conditioning needs. I encourage you to experience the Paradigm Shift by checking out ParadigmPH.com. Here on Thanksgiving, we're focusing on caregiving, care for the poor, and the sick, the indigent. And today we are in Montreal on the program at the Oratory discussing the life of Saint Andre. Here is more of my conversation with Father Claude Grew.
So we continue talking about the legacy of Brother Andre. And, you know, I mentioned in the open the caring ability that he had for all individuals. And, you know, as you're referencing, that came from not only from God, but in my view also from the fact that he was an individual who had, you know, experienced difficulty in his own life. And, you know, to me, this is a story that indicates what any individual is capable of. Granted, you know, God is not necessarily going to bestow the power, a lifeline, so to speak, in between him and you as an individual to have that healing power. But, you know, you can care for and talk to other individuals and, you know, show them that you are empathetic in regards to what they may be going through. And that is for all people. I think a lot of times we feel like if we can't do big things that, you know, maybe we shouldn't do anything at all. Or what does one prayer mean? Or what does, you know, giving, you know, $20 to an individual to buy a sandwich at the convenience store mean in the whole big picture? But Brother Andre's story is so amazing to me because he became a saint in large part by just caring and doing little things for as many people as possible.
Well, that's exactly true. Brother Andre never did anything very exceptional except praying for people,
yeah.
And things were happening through his presence and other people got things done. Like the Brother Andrew started this little place. It was like the spark plug that made it possible for other people to come together and build this beautiful shrine we have now. Mm-hmm. But he was simply the inspiration to make this possible. So that's very interesting to see. And I find it very interesting when I speak to people in school, for school children, for instance, that to say, well, you know, Brother Andrew never had a chance even to go to school as you are. And you see all he has achieved. You have a chance to go to school, to have so much for you. You have to believe that you can achieve a lot, many great things. So I think it's important to encourage people to say that everybody, if he stops and see what are the gifts I have to bring, we'll all discover we have a lot of gift to bring to people, and that will be different from one person to the other. And Brother Andre is a perfect example. If you look humanly, he did not seem to have so much to bring, but in fact he had so much to bring to the society and to people around.
What is sainthood, and how does an individual like Brother Andre achieve sainthood? Because there's obviously individuals that do great good, you, other fathers, sisters and such will work on tirelessly and devote themselves to your passion and to God, but not saints. So what makes Brother Andre a saint or Mother Teresa a saint as opposed to others?
Yeah. Well, I don't think they're necessarily more saints than other people. I think some mothers who have sick children at home, who take all their life, I think they are saints also. But there are people who would be recognized by the church as having attained sainthood because of the way they were, because of the way they were known. They become known by a lot of people. In the process by the church, I would say there are three major steps. The first step, they would just call him a servant of God. That is, they would have studied the life of the person and say, this man has lived a remarkable life. He has shown a lot of goodness in his life, and we discovered that. Then, after that, the church would say, well, if there are signs that God accepted them by a miracle that will be done after his death. So then we'd have people who come and say, well, I've prayed Brother Andrew after his death, and he healed me. The story that made him blessed Brother Andre was a story from somebody from United States who was had a very bad heart condition, and then came and prayed with Brother Andre. And after he saw the doctor, he says, doctor, I don't know what happened, but your heart is all right. So that story was studied. So again, medical doctors would say, we have no explanation. The church would say, well, I think the explanation I can see is the intercession of Brother Andre. So after he became blessed Brother Andre, 20 years after, there was another case of a man who had a young man who had a severe accident and was going to die. And then they prayed Brother Andre, and this person recovered completely from his accident. So again, the doctor says, we don't can't explain how it happened, and then we recognize that. So that's the way it is done in certain cases of people who have been identified by the church as being a special role. So Brother Teresa and John Paul II are all these people. But then while John Paul II was a pope, Brother Andrew was a simple brother. Mm-hmm. So he was not a man who had a very important role in society, but he was recognized because of what he did.
One thing that was interesting that you mentioned before we started doing the show was that you had heard that more Protestants were healed by Brother Andre than Catholics. So that gets to the intercession side of things, where I'm certain that there are some individuals who have come here and have asked for, you know, prayer for a mother and have sought the intercession of Brother Andre, have not received it, or have asked for God to heal their mother or whomever, and it hasn't happened. So this is obviously a theological question, but why is intercession granted in certain circumstances and not in your view?
Well, I'll tell you, years ago I was I was talking with Father Diggy, who was the superior at the rectory at the last years of Brother Andre. And I asked Brother Father Diggy, I says, you know, I find it strange. Some time Brother Andre would meet somebody and says, well, leave your crutches here and go. In some other cases, he would say, well, you make a novena and you see what happened. At the end of the novena, the person would be healed. And in some other cases, he would say, well, I think God wants you to stay with your infirmity and will give you the strength to live with this. And I asked Brother Father De Geer, did you ask Brother Andre how he could do that? He says, well, Brother Andre simply looked at me and says, well, it's clear. It's clear what God wants in this case. It's as if Brother Andre would see what God wants to happen in this or that situation. And really, there's no other explanation to say, well, in some cases, God wants the person to be healed. And if we pray, if we do if we ask God with intensity, God may bring the healing we are asking for. But in some other cases, it doesn't happen. At another time, Brother Andre went to her house and the husband was on his deathbed and the mother was crying and saying, but Brother Andre, why don't you save him from his sickness? And Brother Andre had this strange answer. He says, you know, we don't trust God's arm to get what we want. Mm. And I thought that was, he felt in that, no, God maybe did not want this person to be healed, so I can pray, but we don't twist God's arm to force him. We can't force God to do what we want.
Yeah, this is one of those moments with Brother Andre is sitting right there so we could follow up on this, but you wonder, you know, whether it was God speaking to him and it was his intuition that he would do certain things, or if, as you referenced before, there was how the individual would ask and make a determination about who they mm-hmm. were and make a determination as to what God's will was. Was there any sort of information that you were given in regards to that?
No, I have no. I just feel that in some way Brother Andre was so close to God that he could sense what God's will could be in this or that situation. But if you had asked Brother Andre, is this the way, I don't think he would have used these words, but in the way he was speaking, I felt that he was so in tune with God that he could sense that. And that's kind of a mystery. Just say, well, you have to see it the way Brother Andre could answer to that.
That is Father Claude Giroux joining us here at the Oratory of Montreal, one of the most beautiful spots. As my dad said, I was riding up here, he said, that's one of those beautiful spots in the world. And I think you'd probably agree looking out the window here. Wanted to ask a little bit about Brother Andre in the 1930s. Mm-hmm. And as, you know, the technology was coming around, there was more individuals traveling, and it was also kind of the peak of interest in him. And what was that like here during that that time period from what you have heard, where he is at this point, you know, individuals are coming back from here to New Hampshire, to Boston, mm-hmm. and other places in the world. They're saying we've been healed, and other individuals are coming up here very often in large groups mm-hmm. to try to seek his intercession.
Well, 1930s is a very interesting period for the life of Brother Andre, because we are in a very peculiar situation. The economic crisis started in 1929, and one of the big challenges, the building of the oratory has started, it's growing up, and they don't have the money to complete the building, and the economic crisis was such that they had to stop the building from 1931, 1936, because they just did not have the way to continue.
Just one thing on that, that's obviously the Great Depression in the United States. Right. So, Canada, we often don't think about Canada, the United States, because we're very selfish. But was Canada in the same?
Oh, yes. Same crisis was in Canada and the United States. Was all over. So that was the same situation in 1930, 30, 31. But then, if we see in the 30s, there's a very important moment, 1937, Brother Andre dies. Mm-hmm. And I sense that with the community, the Holy Cross congregation was in charge, Brother Andre was a member of the congregation. The question was, will this continue without Brother Andre? Would people continue to come and help? But then when Brother Andre died, they see that more than 1 million people came to the oratory to see him or to his funeral. There were trains coming from United States to come to the place. The trains were full of people coming to see the Brother Andre who had just died. And I think this was a kind of a turning point where everybody says that's not going to stop after the death of Brother Andre, and that things will continue. And I think this was a very important moment. And what we have discovered is that after the death of Brother Andre, we still had plenty of letters or people coming to say that they have prayed Brother Andre and they were healed after praying Brother Andre. We have piles of testimony of people. I have some of these here of people more recently who were healed after praying Brother Andre. We keep receiving these testimony of the power of Brother Andre even today. So that was a very important thing, that Brother Andre is still alive in God. Of course, he's no more alive on earth, but he is alive in God. And the tomb of Brother Andre has become a very special place. People come, put their hands on the tomb of Brother Andre, pray there. So his spiritual presence is still very powerful and becomes present in our times. The thing that is changing is up till maybe the 1950s, almost all these people were French Canadian people coming from United States, Ontario, places around. But then today, there are people coming from China, Philippines, India, Bangladesh, who come here. So they did not have the same background story, but they keep awakening to the importance of Brother Andre. And as we see here, the people coming to pray here, they come from all over the world. They are Sikh, Hindus, Muslims, Christians, Jews, who come here, and come here not as curious to see the place, but they come here because they find there's a place where they can pray here, and we listen to the people coming to talk to us, and often there are people coming from a completely different background, but they have a sense that in some very special way, the presence of God is still felt in this place. So that, I think, is Brother Andre's spirit that is still alive.
That is Father Claude Grou at the Montreal Oratory. More with Father Grou in just a moment as we discuss the life and legacy of Brother Andre here on this Thanksgiving. This hour of the program presented by New England College as well as Riverbend Community Mental Health, and that segment of the show brought to you by Paradigm Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning.
You're listening to New Hampshire Now with Chris Ryan, presented by the New Hampshire College and University Council. You're listening to New Hampshire Now with Chris Ryan, presented by the New Hampshire College and University Council.
This is New Hampshire Now, 1914-15 and nhtalkradio.com. I am Chris Ryan. Appreciate you joining us for the program. This hour of New Hampshire Now is presented by New England College as well as Riverbend Community Mental Health. And this segment of the show brought to you by Rath Young and Pignatelli, a national impact that's unique in New Hampshire. More information, check out rathlaw.com. We continue this hour at the Montreal Oratory, joined by Father Claude Grou, who actually was the victim of a stabbing incident while he was participating in Mass. It's occurred back in March, and we'll talk about that with him here in this segment. But the focus, though, is on the life and legacy of Brother Andre, his caring for the poor, the sick, and the indigent, and that is our message here on Thanksgiving.
Before, you were mentioning the Spirit of God being in this place, and, you know, if you walk into other churches, you feel something, you see something. This is remarkably different for a number of reasons, its size and its scope. But to me, you know, you were referencing before, the crypt here is by far the most awe-inspiring element. because the heart of Brother Andre is there, and we'll go into why his heart is here, and his tomb and the crutches and everything. It's a very emotional experience for individuals to come here. Have you found that, you know, as well? Obviously, you're the rector here, but is there something different here about and do you feel, you know, Brother Andre's presence here?
Well, the first thing I would say is the way the oratory is built, of course, on the side of the mountain on six different levels, but there is a different experience at different places in this place. For some people, the votive chapel, which is next to the crypt church, is kind of the sacred place where they will feel God's presence very much. Another will be going up to the place where the heart of Brother Andre is, and this will become a very special place. I know other people, they will go to the original chapel, which is outside the main building now, and for them, this will be the place where they will feel more powerfully the presence of God. For other people, it is the huge basilica. Some people just in the huge basilica, back in the basilica, there's a small Blessed Sacrament chapel. This will be the place where it is more powerful. Personally, the tomb of Brother Andre and the surrounding of the tomb of Brother Andre is, for me, a place that is leading me more to prayer. But for other people, it will be another place, another part of this place that will be more important. So I think people become familiar to this or that place, and this become important. I remember somebody who says, well, when I feel very tired, in fact, it's a Muslim, says, when I feel very tired, very discouraged in life, I come and sit in the crypt church, and I spend maybe half an hour sitting in the crypt church. I go back pacified by what I've experienced there. So each one will find the place where God speaks to them in the rectory according to what they feel, what they need.
More theology now. As you mentioned, this is right with that story, I mean, this is a melting pot here of, as I mentioned before, different religions, sexual orientations, mm-hmm. ethnicities, and there's obviously distinct belief systems amongst the individuals, but do you feel there is something to all these individuals of different religious backgrounds coming here? Does it mean that, you know, in fact, Catholicism is, you know, the true religion, or does it mean that there's some sort of a connection that exists between individuals of faith?
Yeah, well, I think people have their own way of approaching God. I think this experience of God can be very different for different people, and we have to be open. Let's say Brother Andre welcomed everybody mm-hmm. with an open heart, and we need to welcome people with an open heart. And in welcoming people, we'll discover the path that God has to reach out to each person, and the path can be very different. I like to say, we welcome people, but we start walking with them from where they are. And we try to see where they want to go. It's a Catholic place. Ideal would be that we can lead them into the church, into understanding more the beauty of the church, read the gospel, know about Jesus, and know about our practice. But each one will make one step, two steps in moving in their own experience. And so that respect for the diversity of paths, you know, it's often also we meet more people, older Christian Catholics, who are very sad because their children do not practice the way they used to practice. Mm-hmm. I like to tell them, well, allow God to reach your children the way He wants to reach them. And I feel the same way. Let God reach out to the Hindu or the Muslim coming here the way he wants. And sometimes we have a very surprising story. And once there were Sikh, you know, these people from North India. They were a whole group. They have their turbans so we can identify them easily. They were lighting a candle at the foot of the statue of St. Joseph. And then I started to talk with them. And the man says, well, you know, I live in Montreal. These are my friends from Toronto. And whenever our friends come outside, I always bring them here. And I ask, what's the meaning for you to light a candle here? And this man said, you know, we in our religion, Sikhism is a monotheist religion, but the saints are very important. We believe that the saints are very important, and we light our candle at the foot of the saint because he leads us closer to God. Maybe he did not know it is Saint Joseph. It doesn't matter. It's a saint, and it brings him closer to God. So I think this is a very important moment. Another, it was on Good Friday, and Good Friday we have wave the cross in the evening, and there's a lot of crowd in the crypt church on that day for the wave of the cross, and then I was just at the door to let people enter, and then I saw a group of people, the way they were dressed was clear they were Muslims. So I started to talk to them and says, well, you just happened to be here today? And they said, no. He said, we know that today you Christians are celebrating the death of Prophet Jesus, and we wanted to be with you to celebrate this. We will not say Prophet Jesus, will be Jesus the Lord, but for them it was important to be with us. I think this tells us a lot about the way people from different religious traditions have something in common, this desire to go beyond themselves, to reach out to God. And each one will do it his own way. And our role is to show the path, to help them to move in that way. And, of course, with our liturgical celebration, this is the liturgical celebration of the Roman Catholic Church, and that's with the way we live our own Christian experience. But each one will walk in his own way towards that.
I think that's fascinating because I think that as human beings, we're all looking to serve a cause greater than ourselves. Mm-hmm. And when you look at, you know, the teachings of Jesus, or you look at the work of the saints, any individual, I think, can look at them and say, this is something that I want my, you know, kids to be like. I want them to be giving to others. I want them to care for the poor. I want them to perhaps care for others at times more than they care for themselves. And you know, that's the story to me of Brother Andre. And as you know, individuals in New Hampshire may know, there's a parish for Brother Andre in Laconia. And I'm curious as to you know the way that the calendar works in religion and really in world history is different than the way the calendar works during the you know a sports season or a lifetime. Do you feel that, you know, 1,000 years from now, 100 years from now, that Brother Andre's role will be, you know, more significant because of the work that he did? Or do you feel that it will be similar to where it is now? Do you see him as being one of those saints in the future that individuals look at and say, he rose from poverty, he had a virtuous life that should be imitated, and therefore there will be more parishes named for him?
Oh, I think there will be more parishes named for him. 1,000 years, a little long to look for, but for years to come, I think there are figures that are very important for us today. And in the recent years, I think Brother Andre and Mother Teresa, for me, are two of these figures with a very different charism of people who are moving us to go beyond who we are. Brother Andreas with his charism of welcoming, listening to people. Brother Teresa with his tremendous gift of herself to the poorest of the poor in the slums of Calcutta. I think they are figures of great importance for us, and I think we need contemporary figures like that of people who are from this century or previous century, people who are not too far in times, who have known things we have known. Brother Andre has built the crypt church during the First World War, went through the economic crisis, and he has seen a lot of things.
He's relatable.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. As I was doing research for this interview, I noted that you were stabbed during a mass back in March. So just over 6 months ago, how are you feeling? And what was the process like of in regards to that?
Well, I think the process for me was very easy. First, the physical wounds were not very deep, so it was one long day in the hospital to stitch things and get things all right. And then I had such a supporting group of people around me to be with with me in these moments that I felt very strong. And also the message I had through email and other ways from so many people was very strengthening for me. The other thing is, towards the person who stabbed me very quickly, we knew that is a person who had suffered from mental disorder. He did not have anything against me, whether he had something against religion and wanted to take revenge, I don't know. But I did not have any hard feeling about him. On the contrary, I hope that he gets the healing he needs. He needs more healing than I do at this moment. So I was very concerned to say that I have my sympathy for this man who is obviously very ill. And then with the group here, the first thing which we did is as soon as I came back to work, the first day I was here, we had a meeting with all the employees at the Rotary. We have about 175, not all of them are there the same day. But we have kind of a healing moment with mm-hmm. these people. We just talk about the story, and now we are beyond that. We have to continue to be careful for security, but this is past. Then on following Friday, exactly 1 week after, I said mass the same hour with mostly the same parishioners or groups of people who come for mass every Friday, and then we celebrated together. And then I thought with this the healing was done, and just now I'm beyond that.
As an individual of faith, was there human emotions? Was there anger? Was there? How did you work your way through that side of things? And because obviously forgiveness is what everyone strives for. Mm-hmm. Did you feel a lot of human emotions during that time period? Did you also seek Brother Andre during that period?
Well, I think there was sadness that things like that could happen. Mm-hmm. I think this we cannot deny, that there was a moment of great sadness, but not anger. I could not be angry with a man who is sick. I felt more sympathy towards that man. And personally, I did not remain with fears that things could happen at any time, so I did not feel any psychological after effect that would make me fear more. So I got back to my regular life with people around me.
In conclusion, what are the lessons that you hope that individuals derive from Brother Andre and from taking in the experience here? As we noted earlier, there's some construction taking place in the background here, and there's projects which are taking place to even enhance the experience.
Mm-hmm. Well, for the Oratory, of course, we have a major project now to improve our places so that we can welcome people in a place that is more suited for the needs of people today. And this is very important. And we hope that with the facilities we have, that we'll continue to welcome more and more people. We have about 2 million visitors every year. And we believe that with things moving, we'll increase this number of visitors. And a number of visitors will always be tourists who just come because it's part of the tour of Montreal. But a large number of people, when they come here, even if they come just like tourists, they feel there's a spirit here, and they feel that this is enhancing their desire to be good, to do good to other people. And I think this is going to continue, and this place will continue to be a very crucial place for people from all over. And also in the context where we are, that people who come from different parts of the world will come here and feel that we are all a large family. Mm. We may have come from different backgrounds. Some speak one language, another language. But beyond that, we are all human beings who want to be together and live together.
Father Grew, appreciate your time.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure.
You're listening to New Hampshire Now with Chris Ryan, presented by the New Hampshire College and University Council.